Around here, we have no use for sapheads, scallywags, jackwagons, or cowards. You are listening to the Western Freedom Forum with your host, Darren Bushman.
Well, welcome to episode 3 of the Western Freedom Forum. Really excited about my guest today. I have Commissioner Mark Whitney from Beaver County, Utah. Mark hails from Milford. It's a little railroad town out in the middle of the West desert, I guess. About, 30 miles west of Beaver? Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, we're just 30 miles west of the county seat.
That's right. Mark's the father of, I believe it's 4 children, right, Mark?
5.
5 children. And Mark's been a county commissioner now going on 18 years, something along those lines, and served in numerous positions with Milford City Council and planning and zoning. And I think this is his second stint as a county commissioner. Very active in his county and very active on a state and a national level. Mark holds an office with the Utah Association of Counties. He will, I believe, next year, is that right, Mark? You'll be the president of the Utah Association of Counties.
So I'll be first vice president the following year. I'll be president.
First vice president, that's right. He's second vice president this year, first vice president next year, and then he'll be the president of the Utah Association of Counties. And he's doing a great job for the state of Utah in that leadership capacity. So I'm excited to have Mark on. Mark has been dealing with a problem in his county for a long time, and it's a real challenge to the West, and that's the issue of wild horses and the BLM management of the wild horses. So, Mark, why don't you start out by just giving us, if you will, kind of the background and the history of that?
Well, first, Darren, let me start off by saying thank you for the kind introduction, and as always, it's great working with people like you and that take such an interest in what we do as county commissioners, because a lot of people don't realize just exactly where we're at and what we do dealing with outside forces that negatively affect our county. A lot of people think it's just things that are within our county, and it's truly not. And one of the things that's plagued, especially the whole western side of the state of Utah and the western state itself, is the overpopulation of the wild horses and burros. And we've been trying to deal with this. We're not advocating that they take these animals off the ranges. What we are saying is that the Congress enacted the Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act of 1971 in how to deal and manage these herds and these horses to an AML, which is an animal management level, appropriate management level. And they have not been doing so. And especially with the drought that the West has been facing over the past 5 years, it's just an ever-increasing problem. And so it's something that's very frustrating to our side of the state and, again, in the whole West that's trying to make the federal government live up to their own acts and their own legislation that they create. So that's where we're at with this, Darren.
Well, Mark, tell me this, because, you know, this isn't something I deal with in my county, probably other people, there may be other counties that deal with it, but I'm still confused as to why this is a federal issue. You know, they don't, as I understand it, manage wildlife other than endangered species as a general rule. States are left to manage wildlife. And why is it, Mark, and how did it come to be that wild horses and burros are a federal issue versus being managed at the state level? It doesn't make any sense to me. Can you explain that? Or,
well, and you know, we shake our head and scratch our head a lot of times, too, because they're under the direction of the Bureau of Land Management, and the Bureau of Land Management is to manage the public lands. They're not in the wildlife or the wild horse care business. We feel like that should be a state issue, and right now, Congressman Chris Stewart is presenting a bill, and he's got legislation going before Congress to put that back under the care and direction of the state. The state should be managing these horses just like they do regular wildlife. And we're hoping that can be done. But unfortunately, it's not the way it is right now, so we just have to deal with it. And so that's kind of where we're at.
It ended up at the federal level because of some federal legislation driven by whom? Do you know?
Well, a lady by the name of, they call her Wild Horse Annie. She was out of Nevada, and there's nothing, again, I'd never say anything derogatory. She had a passion and a love for these beautiful animals at that time. She wanted to see them preserved and taken care of. The act itself of 1971, when they put that in, was really truly written as good, I feel like, good legislation to protect these animals. And I feel like that the people that done it had good intentions. I just want to read you just a kind of a phrase off the first part of the Wild Free Roman Horses and Burros Act of 1971. It says that Congress finds and declares that wild free roaming horses and burros are living symbols of the historic and pioneer spirit of the West, that they contribute to the diversity of life forms within the nation and enrich the lives of American people, and that these horses and burros are fast disappearing from the American scene. And at that time, they were. But due to the fact of our ever-increasing ridiculous national debt that we incur, trillions of dollars, they cannot even enact and manage any parts of the government because they don't have the resources to do so, to live up to their own laws. So, you know, today what I want to do is I want to concentrate on three words that are really important in this document, this legislation. One of them is thriving, the other is natural, and the other word is shall. And I want to touch on each one of those as we go forward on this, Darren.
Okay.
Because it's very important for people to understand.
Tell us, before you jump onto those three words, tell us what the current situation is in the desert and with these. I know it affects several counties. I believe there's Beaver County and Iron County and Washington County, correct, that are affected?
And also Millard County and Twilla County, all the way across the western states that border Nevada, and then it's then clear into Nevada, Wyoming, all these western states that have horses, and the burros are even more affected. They're even over into Emory and to Uinta counties. That's where they got a big problem on these, on the burros, is over in that area.
The current situation out there, though, is are they just so overpopulated? I've seen some pictures of just some mangy looking things that I'm not sure I'd call horses. Is it just pure overpopulation, Mark, or what's the status out there right now?
It truly is, and forgive me because I don't have my exact figures, but I'm going to be fairly close. When I talk about the appropriate management level of horses in the West, the Act says that there can be 36,000 wild horses, wild and free roaming horses in the West. Right now, well, as of last year when we really put the hammer down because we saw these magnificent animals from 20, 30 years ago start to become so inbred. And then the BLM started trying to adopt these animals. People did not like them. They were not a marketable horse. So they brought in horses from Washington State, these pinks, and tried to crossbreed, going against the Act. The Act itself says that, you know, you cannot do that, but they're trying to make a marketable horse and try to get the non-inbreeding out of there to where they are magnificent, but unfortunately, they're not. The Atlantic horse that was brought in by the Spanish conquistadors some hundreds of years ago was a Spanish barred. Absolutely gorgeous, beautiful horse.
Uh-huh.
But this horse is almost a vanishing breed now.
Okay.
And I'm going to get back to my numbers again. As I said, the number was about 50,000. It was their own numbers last year. the AML that was set forth as at their management level was for wild and free roaming horses was 36,000. Last year, they estimated that it could be 50,000. Those of us in the West and commissioners that talked about that, we feel like it was closer to 60,000. So it's almost double what that is. And now you couple that with the drought that we've had over the last 5 years, and they are actually their own worst predator and enemy. They're literally eating and drinking themselves out of the house and home on these western rangelands because of no water and no feed. Now, also, you keep in mind that every 4 years, the wild horse population doubles. So just from last year, as I use my number, and I'll even split the difference, we'll go 55,000. That means 25% more full crop again this year. So that's, you know, use the numbers. That's another some 12,000 new horses. So we're up to around 60-something thousand. And as I said, every 4 years, it just keeps doubling. And they'll come out. For example, just in the West Desert, in the last year and a half, they've tried to take off some roughly 300 head. Well, that doesn't even keep up with what's being born every year.
Oh, wow.
And most of these were, the biggest part of these that were taken off was on Highway 21 because they had literally been pushed from the foothills clear down on the highways where there was some grasses becoming an actual danger to the motorist that was hitting these horses and killing them and also hurting individuals. So the roundup that was just done recently out in the West Desert was to remove them off the highway. So, you know, when I was a kid, even a young man, up until just a few years ago, you never saw these horses in the wild or in the bottom of the valley. But they've been forced there. That's just in ours. Now, again, you've got to remember, again, with that number being said, there's also some 50,000 plus in captivity in corrals throughout the West that we're feeding every day because they can't get rid of them. They're, you know, they used to have a slaughter program for these horses, and there's a lot of us that don't really like the word slaughter or don't feel like that's a humane way to do it. But there is a way to get rid of these horses in a humane way. And this is only my opinion and the opinion of a lot of us, is to allow international adoption. There are a lot of our neighbors to the east, to the west, even throughout the Orient, through Europe, that will take all these horses that we would give them. But again, Congress will not even look at this.
Well, Mark, do they have any predator other than eating themselves out of home? I mean, are they pretty much predator-free?
They truly are. As I said, the only enemy they have is their own self, and that's eating themselves out of a house home. I'll give you another example. Last year, the range situations were so bad, BLM, in their own infinite wisdom, sent the cattle grazers, who's historically been on these ranges a long time. They share these ranges a lot together. In fact, thank God the cattlemen were out there because they're the ones that developed and put a lot of the seed on the ranges, and especially the water sources. You know, enhanced these springs, drilled wells, made ponds to at least alleviate some of the pressure on these animals to where they could live in harmony. But because of the drought again, the BLM sent these ranchers letters saying, hey, please reduce your numbers of your cattle by 50% on these lands. Yet they're not willing to do anything about the wild horse.
Right.
And people don't understand the difference when a horse versus a cow feeds on a plant. A horse will literally pull it and uproot that plant.
Correct.
Destroy it and kill it forever. To where a cow will only just browse on it till it gets to the bottom, and then it will rejuvenate itself.
Right. Well, I want to back you up just to one of the, because we see this with cattle ranchers too. You know, you get sportsmen and wildlife people, and I love that as much as anyone, but they don't necessarily give the ranchers the fair shake that they deserve, because much of the water sources and the infrastructure that's in place to support the wildlife and in your situation, the wild horses, is actually placed on the range by the ranchers, as well as, you know, keeping the range in a sustainable situation as far as, keeping rabbit brush and sagebrush and all of this stuff from overtaking the grasslands. And so it, similar situation, I'm assuming, out in the West Desert with the ranchers that are trying to run operations out there.
Absolutely. And again, the cattlemen are an unappreciated component of this whole situation. These ranges, these receipts, these water sources, as I said, have been put in, as you said, by the cattlemen. These ranges know what the best stewards of these lands, these federal range lands out here, are cattlemen. They take care. They've been on there for hundreds of years, some of them. It's their heritage. It's their living. It's the dynamics of their everyday bloodline that they live and thrive off these lands. So they have to take care of these ranges. They need to.
Right, right. So there's a fair amount of controversy, though, right, Mark, as far as any sort of roundups or any sort of adoption. It seems like there's a lot of special interest groups that really get upset about anything to do with these wild horses. Give us a little bit of a feel of that.
Well, and again, even some of those groups, they are outspoken. Some of them, I think their hearts in some instances are in the right place too. They want to see these animals thrive, and they also want to see them survive in a good climate. However, sometimes, they go over the line a little bit and force other issues. But, you know, we've got to work together. Because I think every one of us have a certain love and appreciation for a few of these horses on these lands. They deserve to be there too. And there's plenty of room for the cattle, the wildlife, and the horses. But, as I said, the federal government made their own laws, lived to their laws. They wrote their legislation, they won't even live to their own. You know, there's a situation over in San Juan County with one of our great friends, Commissioner Phil Lyman, as you know, in Recapture Canyon.
Right.
He done a peaceful protest to do a peaceful ride on a road that was illegally closed by the federal government, yet he was arrested. Okay? Now, you've got the federal government that's basically breaking their own laws, the 1971 Horses and Burro Act. The laws itself, they are violating. Who's going to arrest them? Who arrests the arresters?
right. And what's the response that you've gotten from that, Mark? I mean, I know you guys basically around April of last year, you commissioners kind of banded together, gave them an ultimatum. What's the general response been from the Bureau of Land Management?
Again, our local BLM offices has been wonderful to work with. And again, they would do it in a heartbeat. But remember, they're hamstrung. You know, my good fellow friend and Commissioner Dave Miller out of Iron County uses the phrase and the catchphrase on it. He says that the BLM in our local offices are basically like a gilded horse. They're impotent to do their job. They don't have the resources to do it. They want to do their job, but they do not have the resources to do this. And you're right. Last year, we basically, Commissioner Miller and myself, Beaver County and Iron County, we wrote them letters, done resolutions, even had a resolution done and passed through the National Association of Counties Public Land Steering Committee saying, bring these animals back into AML. If you don't, we will take things into our own hands, which is something we did not want to do, but we needed to do something. But in the meantime, something broke loose south of us, as you know, what happened down there on the Bundy Ranch.
Right.
And we did not feel like at that time it was in the best interest of anybody to have any of that spill over into our state. Because
right.
There was people, part I mean, I literally, and also Commissioner Miller, we had phone calls. We had emails. People from clear into Wyoming, cowboys, cattlemen saying, hey, we'll bring our cowboys. We'll bring our semis. We'll bring everything there is. We will help you round those horses up and put them in corrals. Please let us. So at that time, we thought, you know what? We're going to take the high road. We better back off on this because we saw how hostile the situation turned out down in Bunkerville. We did not want that escalating and overspilling into western Utah.
Right.
So we took the high road. Our local cattlemen got together. They created themselves a group. It's called WRCA, the Western Rangeland Conservation Association, formed a 401c3, filed a lawsuit against the BLM. Now, it's pretty sad when our own people have to sue our own government. And that's where we're going wrong in America today.
I would agree with you entirely. And, you know, I see this in a lot of federal agencies where they've gotten themselves painted into a corner, rules so complex they can't even abide by their own rules. And it seems to be the only desire to resolve these is just more money, more money, more money. And you know, when we're talking about a managing partner that's $18, $19 trillion in debt, I don't know where that more money is going to come from. And at some point, states need to act like the sovereign entities that they are. You know, I don't see us getting out of this if we don't. I haven't seen anything the federal government's gotten involved yet that they didn't mess up, Mark.
You know, and you're exactly right. And that's why we need more sustainable control at a local level. The best government for the people is the government that's closest to the people, whether it be county, city, and state. That's why we all are pushing for the TPL to transfer these public lands, because Washington does not get it. How can you manage lands in the West when you sit at a desk or a pulpit at the state or at the national capital, nation's capital, Washington, D.C., when you're not even at feet on the ground?
Well,
you know, it just makes no sense.
Our good friend Ken Ivory has said it a million times that one size fails all policy, and I believe that to be true. So I took you away from your three words, Mark, and I want to give you the time to cover those. So let's get back to what you're talking about.
It kind of fits in to kind of sum this up a little bit, but I just want to read another little part from this act. This act is quite a lengthy act, but there's just some components in there I think that are very important when we start talking about this. And so I just kind of, you know, I've used them as bullet points as I've been working on this issue for years now. But it says the secretary shall maintain wild free-roaming horses and burros in a manner that is designed to achieve and maintain a, here's the word, thriving, again, another word, natural ecological balance on the public lands. He, again, magical word, shall consider the recommendation of qualified scientists in the field of biology and ecology, some of who, again, shall be independent of both federal and state agencies, and may include members of the advisory board established in Section 7 of this Act. So again, saying that they want to have a thriving natural, well, neither one of those two that right there are being accountable for, because they're not thriving and they're not natural. They're
right.
Actually, these poor horses, some of them, I mean, I was just out west just a couple weeks ago, and I saw her, and a lot of their bones are showing in their ribs. They're sad. And thank goodness we've got some good rains right now. It's gonna bring those rangelands up to where there's going to be a little feed at least this year. So anyway, so they're not thriving. They're not natural anymore, because I told you, they've been inbred for so long that they've tried to bring these outside feral horses, introduce them into the herds, so therefore they're violating their own policy of 1971, and the word shall. They're not, it doesn't say should, it says shall. You shall do these things, but they're not.
Right.
So they're in violation of their own federal laws that they themselves, Congress, enacted and written and passed.
You know, it's a sad situation, because I think that the general public has this vision, Mark, of the beautiful wild Mustang running across the range, you know, with the sun in the background and, you know, the silhouette of those beautiful Mustangs, you know. And unfortunately, if you've been out in that West Desert, that's not what we see. That's not what's out there. It's like you're talking about. They're mangy. They're starving. Their bones are showing. I'm not sure many of them even got the energy to run, do they?
Absolutely not. And these horses that are out there now are not the same balanced herds that were here some 30, 40 years ago when I was a young man. They're just not even the same.
So right.
Something needs to be done. Again, so, I still think there's a manageable approach that Congress has got to do. But I don't know how we're going to do it. We're trillions of dollars in debt already. I don't think that the wild and free roaming horses is number one priority for Congress right now.
Well, Mark, I know there's been a lot of stuff go on. I think there was some stuff went on at the legislature here in Utah this year. I don't know what other states are doing. And I know there's some stuff going on, like you said, with Congressman Stewart and whatnot. Just bring us up to date on where we're at from a legislative standpoint to try and get this resolved.
Well, and even in our own legislature working that very diligently as I do and as also as you do every year, we've got a lot of good encouragement. The state is ready and willing to take that animal herd over any time the feds will release him. So we've got that commitment from our legislature and also, I believe, even from the governor. So they all understand that this is a problem, but the magic is they've got to allow them to manage them in an appropriate management level and also to manage those numbers to where they can be consistent and be allowed to do something with them horses when they become overpopulated so that they're not eating themselves out of the house and home. So we're making some great strides, at least going forward, if they'll just enact and let us take over these horses.
Right. And then at the federal level, where do you see that going?
I really, you know, in talking with Congressman Stewart's people, they feel like they're going to get some great support from other congressmen and senators to get this bill passed. And so we're hoping, crossing our fingers, that this bill will possibly be introduced and passed this year.
So, Mark, I mean, I know one of the things I've heard some numbers, and of course, I don't have this problem in my county, so I don't stick my nose in it as far as I probably could, but you know, you said something like 50,000 horses are being fed in feedlots, and then you've got, you know, way over population, you know, just in the West Desert. So would that bill address not only those that are wild and free roaming as well as those that are in captivity in feedlots, Mark? Is it in the intention to address that as well?
It is what I've been told that it will address those horses, because it's costing the American taxpayers millions of dollars every year to take care of those horses that are in these corrals, that they're in captivity.
Yeah,
and all they're doing is feeding them. That's all they're doing. So they've taken them out of their natural environment of what the bill says of being free roaming, and now they've got them in captivity. Spend $1 million of taxpayer dollars feeding these horses.
Yeah, I heard a number, something like the lifetime cost of one of those horses was $50,000 or something like that.
Yeah, it is. Again, with all due respect to my ignorance today on my numbers, but yeah, from the first to when it dies to feed and take care of one of those horses in captivity is well over $50,000.
Well over $50,000. Wow, those are some high quality horses to be putting that kind of money in. They ought to be racing
be
at the Belmont.
Down. Yeah, exactly.
they ought to be racing for money or something. Well, Mark, I appreciate so much kind of bringing us up to speed this whole thing. I try to wrap up each one of these podcasts with a couple of key things, and I guess we'll start with the two things that you think listeners can do to make a difference.
Get involved. Put the right letters to Congress. And the main thing is don't take other people's opinions. Do your own research and gather your own facts on the validity and the status of these horses and where they're at. If you want to get involved, make sure that you're well-educated on the issue. And as I said, you know, write your congressmen, write your senators, put pressure, because you know what? we need to take this country back because we are not going the right direction with the leadership we've got in Washington right now.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I said that on another podcast. I had talked with a staffer from Orrin Hatch's office, and he had told me that on an issue that's not, you know, one of the limelights, you know, gay marriage or abortion, the typical response that they'll get in their office is less than 50 or 60 letters. And so you figure here's our congressman trying to represent a state of, you know, 3 or 4 million people. And on an issue critical like this, they maybe get 50 or 60 letters. So writing a letter, making a phone call, sending a fax, sending an email can go a long ways to making a difference, especially if 10 people do it and they each get 10 people to do it. So
absolutely. I cannot emphasize that more. Numbers speak for themselves. The more the merrier. We need to get a message across, and it takes numbers to do that.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap up with putting you on the hot seat now. This is the Western. This is the Western Freedom Forum. So the question to you is, what do you see as the single biggest threat to Western freedom and prosperity today?
You know, Darren, that's an actual easy question for me to answer. And it's an acronym we know as ERJA, E-R-J-A, which stands for Equal Rights to Justice Act. That was an act that was enacted by Congress in their infinite wisdom, if you want to so call that, that allows groups of people to form a 401c3 nonprofit corporation. We call them NGOs or special interest groups.
Right.
These people can create and they file lawsuits against the federal government, and guess who pays the bill when it comes down to it?
You and
me. American taxpayers. Until they repeal that law, this country, it will be the demise of this country as we know it, because that's what's happening. And that's what's tying up our timber industry, this wild horse, whether it be prairie dogs, whether no matter what it be, because you've got these NGOs, or again, non-governmental organizations, special interest groups, and every time something comes out, they sue the federal government. So what is the stand the federal government takes now? They back away from them. They don't even dare do anything because they're scared to have to pay it out. Because, as I said, we've got such a rising debt that we're suing ourselves with our own money, and yet we're borrowing the money from China to pay it.
it makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it, Mark? Here we are, we're paying people to sue us, and we're turning around and borrowing that money to give to the people that we paid to sue us. We're borrowing it from another country. It's a real mess, and I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. I think the equal access to justice and the whole litigation issue of federal agencies is just insane. You know, one of the things that is unfortunate, I was talking to one of Congressman Stewart's office on this exact subject. It's been 6-8 months ago, and you know, not only do we have the Equal Access to Justice Act money that's being paid out to NGOs in extremely large sums, it's really, really difficult to find it and find out how much it is and who it's going to, but even more difficult to find out who's getting money and how much they're getting is when you start talking about a sue and settle situation, where now these agencies, instead of going to court and losing in an equal access to justice claim, they will just settle out of court, and then they do that under a squelched confidentiality situation. So the general public can't even find out how much money was provided in a settlement. And so this has just become the growth curve for exponential growth curve for these NGOs, as you mentioned. So I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. That's a huge issue, I think, nationwide.
And it's something that's so frustrating. If you take FLTMA or NEPA, every one of those acts that are so important to Congress that they enacted upon everything that we do in the West before we can do anything, said they must coordinate, they shall coordinate with local governments, commissioners, state legislators, whoever will. But it's come to a point now to where they don't coordinate with us, they collaborate with these NGOs or special interest groups behind the doors to give in to them, and we don't even have a seat at the table anymore.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Mark. I think we've seen some of that recently, and you know, it's really unfortunate because we've now got agencies that are managing by litigation avoidance. You know, that's what their capacity is, and they're paralyzed because of it.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, Mark, we're running to the end of our time limit here. I just want to tell you how grateful I am to not only have you as a friend, have you as a fellow commissioner, but how grateful I am for you being willing to take the time to lay this out, hopefully so everyone can understand the situation. And it's not all rosy like some would have you to believe when it comes to these wild horses. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to do it, Mark.
And likewise, Darren, the pleasure is all mine. It truly is. You're equally a great friend and also a great colleague. And I want to thank you for you taking the time to spend with me today on this issue.
Well, I appreciate it. And we'll have you back on. I'm sure we've got plenty of topics to talk about in the future.
I'm sure we do. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today here on the Western Freedom Forum. Make sure you stop by iTunes and give us a review. And also check us out on westernfreedomforum.com, the website. You can check out show notes from this episode. We'll have some links to some of the documents that we talked about and the things that we talked about in this episode. And we look forward to having you join us on the next episode of the Western Freedom Forum.
If you're one of them tweeting types, make sure to follow the Western Freedom Forum on Twitter at WesternFF. Now, get on it. Yeah!